Can an assistance dog also be a therapy dog? In this episode of the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast, Sam and Amy discuss the differences between assistance dogs and therapy dogs, highlighting their distinct roles, training requirements, and behavioural characteristics. They explore the challenges and ethical considerations in managing these dogs' workloads, emphasising the importance of clear boundaries between different roles and responsible handling. If you find this podcast valuable, please take a moment to leave us a review. And remember to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel so this information can reach more like-minded people.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. We do not have Max here with us today because she recognises public holidays, which we think is very lame of her, don't we, Amy?
More fun to be with us, but she's probably having an amazing day.
She might just edit this out, so I didn't think about that.
She has the power.
We have the wonderful Amy with us today. I pulled her out of facilitating today's course for a little chat with me. So if you haven't met Amy before, this is the wonderful Amy. She's been on a few of our podcasts. Amy's a psychologist and a teacher, and she works at a school with her therapy dogs, Wilbur and Lucy. Do they both still go?
No, well, Lucy Moonlight, sometimes she comes for the occasional visit, but it's mostly Wilbur, and he's one day a week now and getting closer and closer to retirement.
They're getting old.
Yeah, they are getting old. He still loves it, and he gets plenty of naps during the day, but just slowing them down. I'm only there part-time, so it's nice balance to have dog days and non-dog days as well. So it's a lot for dogs in schools.
It is a lot. We did have that podcast on retiring your therapy dogs, guys. Just go back a couple of episodes if you want to listen to that. But Oliver's getting old too. He turns 10 this year and he's just slowing down a bit. So
still looks so pretty and young and sprightly. Like, he doesn't look old.
I know. He's just slowing down though. Like, you know, he's a bit slower to get up.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. He loves his job, like loves his job. So he's not retired yet, but I am seriously considering it. This might be his last year. We might finish up. Well, he turns 10 in September. So maybe.
Yeah. Smaller, my dogs have taken longer to slow down, but Wilbur he's just got so much. It must be the Cocker Spaniel in him. He's just got so much energy and vibrancy and enthusiasm that one day is a really good balance.
Yeah, so, Ollie does one day at the clinic. I've started taking him out of here, like my home office, just depending on what clients are coming in and how playful the other dogs are going to want to be, because he's not really into that. So I'll let him out of this room and he can go and have his little naps. Go and have a little nap in the garden.
Yeah. Eat some chickens.
Yeah. He loves that.
That's the luxury of being in a home clinic, right?
Yeah.
The other big consideration, I know this isn't the topic for the day, but now you've got me going, but the big consideration, my office has changed this year. So I used to have a really big office that had like multiple couches, really nice big open space. And I feel like I've been moved, not disrespectfully, but I feel like I'm in a cupboard.
Do you need me to speak to someone at your school to give you your office back?
Well, we're getting buildings built, so there is reason kind of behind it, but it means that the way I work is different. So that's a big consideration as well. Wilbur loves to curl up on the couch. Like he's quite happy in the space, but it's not as big. So I know that certainly does have an impact on how much flexibility I've got with him and yeah. So
it does.
Things change all the time.
Your office space actually makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So
we talk about that in the course for everybody who doesn't know that yet. Okay, so today We are going to have a little chat about assistance dogs versus therapy dogs because this came up for us. We had a conversation about this like last week or something like that, which came up organically. And sometimes I think we have these conversations amongst us and then we just expect everybody else to like know or agree with what we think. But they don't know because we haven't told them what we think about this little topic. We tell people that ask us about it, but I just think getting the word out there a little bit on our considered opinions on this, because there are people out there in the industry who believe or appear to believe that a dog can work in an assistance dog role and a therapy dog role concurrently. And I don't reckon. So we might have a chat about what is an assistance dog and what is a therapy dog, because we do still get a lot of people who ask us to train their dogs for them, but they're actually after an assistance dog, which we don't do. We only do therapy dogs. So Amy, do you wanna
Yeah.
you've made
Well,
us that amazing graphic that's on our website. I'll actually pull it up while you're chatting.
this comes up a lot because people, especially in schools, make up terminology for what they're going to call a dog in a school. And so it just demonstrates over and over the confusion. So an assistance dog is trained to work alongside someone with a identified disability and to be able to support them with their functions of daily living. So we have so many different incredible assistance dogs in our world, and really depending on the individual needs of the person with a disability, the dog can provide some support to help them with functioning. So that could be from a perspective of we know we've got seeing eye dogs or guide dogs or dogs for the blind. We've got lots of different, that tends to be the first one we jump to when we think about assistance dogs and helping people access public areas and be able to leave their home because the dog's aiding them and keeping them safe and supporting them to function in their world when they wouldn't otherwise have the same access. And then we've got so many other different assistance dogs as well. So it's very individualized. It's very much based on the person with the disability and what their needs are, and the dog should be trained around what that individual's needs are. So every assistance dog will have different skills and different strengths that they're bringing to that service. So pretty high demand for a dog and big expectations on those dogs, huge amount of focus needed for those dogs as well. Medical alert dogs fit the same criteria as well. Imagine a dog having to pay so much attention to scents, pheromones, all sorts of things that are happening, behaviors that are happening for an individual that might indicate that they're at significant medical risk. Like incredible, incredible to have that support if you had, those risks in your life and you could have this lovely dog that sleeps with you or is in that same space as you and letting you know something is about to happen. You need to lie down on the floor, giving you those cues. Pretty incredible stuff.
Oh, they're amazing. Like, oh, you see the reels coming up, like on my Instagram, of these diabetic alert dogs, seizure alert dogs. Like, they're just absolutely unbelievable, the work that they do. So we've got that kind of, like you said, like that kind of group of assistance dogs where they're sensing something and their job is to alert you that you're going to have some kind of medical episode. Then we've got the physical support ones. So those are the dogs that are trained to, go and open the fridge and get things out of the fridge and pick items up for people that struggle with mobility. So they're picking up items off the ground and handing them to them and things like that. So, busy dogs, but they're being asked to do a task, or they might sense, like if you drop your keys, they'll probably just, pick them straight up and hand them to you and stuff like that, which is cool. And then, like you said, so dogs that are leading people with vision impairments around, they're obviously working when they're out guiding people around and making sure that they don't run into things and navigating foot traffic and all that sort of stuff. And then we've got this probably more new group, which is for the psychosocial disability group. And so those assistance dogs, their job is to alleviate feelings of depression and anxiety primarily. So we have like PTSD dogs, so people suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder. Those dogs are designed or trained or nurtured into alerting to things like panic attacks, but also they do things like clear the room and stuff like that, and they'll
Turn
put
lights on.
lights on so that people don't have to walk into dark spaces. Just all sorts of things that help them avoid their triggers so they don't go into panic attacks, stuff like that. The dogs that we see out and about, so my clinic is down at Redcliffe, and it would be every day that I'm out there and I see an assistance dog, quote unquote, working down up on the foreshore in at Redcliffe. And I don't know what, like, lots of disabilities are invisible. So I don't know what the disabilities are, but I do know that the dog is absolutely not doing anything it's supposed to be doing because it's barking at humans or dogs or whatever. So we certainly have a lot of dogs out and about that shouldn't be probably out and about, but that's not what this conversation's about. This conversation's going to be about, okay, so if your dog is already working as an assistance dog, can you then also work with that dog as a therapy dog and vice versa? I've just put this graphic up here on the screen for anyone that doesn't realize if you're not watching on YouTube, but you can find this on our website as well. It's under the frequently asked questions tab. And it's actually this really cute little graphic that Amy has made for us a while ago to help us with a visual to answer this question for people, because it happens for us all the time. And it compares the assistance dog's job, the therapy dog's job, and the companion dog's job. So the fastest way that I answer this question when people ask me is that an assistance dog is here to support you, the handler, to have access to the community, whereas a therapy dog is there to support other people to have access to services, therapy services, education, whatever it is. So our therapy dog's job is to make services and community more accessible, and they are handled by a person who is either volunteering or working in that field, so health, education, whatever it might be. And the dog's job is to reduce barriers of access for participants or consumers who might otherwise be less likely to engage in these services, whether it's health or education or whatever it is. The assistance dog is there for the handler. So they are there so that the person who owns and is handling the dog can access the community. So whether that means that they need additional support so that they can go down to the local shops, or they need that additional support so that they can go to their workplace or whatever it might be, or around the home, alerting to, medical alerts and stuff like that. Now, the law on assistance dogs differs by state, but there is also national law. So, and that trumps all of the state laws. So I don't know why the states have laws, but that's my understanding as it's been explained to me by the experts. So we're not going to comment on, we're not across all of that. If you want to find out more about that, you can let us know and we can pass you on to the people who are in the know. But yeah, basically the question is, so if my dog is my assistance dog, so if Nala was my assistance dog, so she was assisting me, and would you say most typically, Amy, this would be like the people who ask us about this, would this be like a psychosocial disability?
I think, I mean, without the necessarily revealing that, I think that can be the assumption just based on the role of the dog and what the dog's being asked to do. But I think this would certainly stream into others as well.
Yeah, because it's about, the hand, like the handler, so it might be the clinician or the educator or whoever. And their dog is their assistance dog. And then they want to take that dog to work with them, but then also offer animal assisted therapy, which would be that the dog is now interacting with the client or the consumer and putting their attention and focus on them. So the reason that we say no to this is because I think to respect the assistance dog's role, I think that we have to acknowledge that those dogs are working really hard. to support their handler, and their whole instinct and their whole job is about having their full focus on the handler so that they can be in tune. So let's say it's an anxiety support dog. Their job is to pick up on my anxiety and then offers me some kind of support so the dogs can alert, or they can just be present and I can, pat my dog and I can feel less anxious. Because like I've absolutely like if I was going to go down to I've said this before, if I was going to go down to the cafe by myself and have lunch by myself, no way. Like I would never. I don't know if I've ever done that, but I really the thought of that, I'm like, no, thank you. But if I take a dog with me, I'm like, absolutely. It's me and my dog are out together. I'm not by myself. So this is not embarrassing for me to go and have lunch by myself because I'm with my dog. I'm obviously taking my dog out for lunch. Like
You need to travel more for work, Sam, because once you're traveling for work, it's you got to feed yourself and you're out by yourself. So that will help.
I will feed myself in private. Thank you very much. That's why they have room service. It's for your dignity. Thank you, Amy. And you should listen to that advice, actually.
I'll sit on my own, all embarrassed by myself,
You
having
have a child that you can drag around with you wherever you want. So you can literally go wherever you want all the time. I have to like make a friend to go places that aren't dog friendly.
I'll give you a little blanket, a little comforter.
Just get a little plushie. Anyway, I don't have an
Dog.
assistance dog. I don't need an assistance dog. I'm fine.
Today, we'll reassess it. I think if we spend our time distracting those dogs, or if we encourage those dogs to be constantly seeking interaction with people, how are they then accessible when they're needed? And I also think they're different temperaments. There might be some overlapping characteristics, but they're different temperaments. The dogs that love the world and the people and love interacting with everyone is different, in my perspective, to the ideal assistance dog that is
Yeah,
there
it is.
for focused and there for you. And the more breeders you talk to that are really delving in and building their understanding in this space, and we do a lot of education in this space. If you're a
Yeah.
breeder, we've got a breeder's course to help unpack this because it's a whole area. But really amazing breeders that I've had conversations with are looking at what are these puppies best at? What do these puppies love doing? And are you a puppy that is there about the one person and really focused, or are you a puppy of the people? You a
It's
puppy of
literally part of the puppy temperament assessment.
And but often, if you think about it, people are falling into these worlds without great knowledge of puppy development and without great knowledge of puppy temperament assessment and all of those things. And so, even myself, I didn't know back in the day when I got dogs as much as I do now, but they are completely different. And the more we can understand that from the outset, the better outcomes we can have for our dogs as well.
Do you know how many failed guide dogs we have had through our courses? Like they fail the guide dogs training thing that they go into, and then they rehab. The guide dogs have their own therapy dog situation of some sort. Well, they did. I don't know if they still do, but they were going, oh, well, these dogs aren't suitable as assistance dogs, so let this dog would actually be a good therapy dog. So that's how you know that they are definitely different. Guide dogs are not like these are the same thing. Guide dogs are like, no, this dog's not suitable as a as an assistance dog. This is a therapy dog. Like we've had so many failed guide dogs through our courses. Heaps. Failed assistance dogs through our courses. Heaps of them. Because they rehome them. Like they send them out to therapy homes. If they're suitable for that, they might just go to pet homes if they're not. So they're totally a different thing. In the puppy temperament assessment, like we're looking at, is the puppy going to be more owner focused or like outwardly focused? Do they like meeting new people? That's a therapy dog. If they want to be like a Velcro dog, that's way more likely to be successful as an assistance dog because they need to be a very one person dog to have their focus on you all the time. So when we were talking about this the other week, I had some insights because I, as everybody who has been listening knows, I've been training a livestock guardian dog who I think is about, what are we? She must be about She's 16 or 17 months old. And so a livestock guardian dog has a job. So her job is to bond with her livestock, and then she guards them from predators. So we have a number of predators. We've got dingoes, foxes, hawks, and whatever else. So her job is to keep an eye out and keep an ear out for her livestock. So she sleeps, and you know, a lot. She's when every time I look out at her, I'm like, she's asleep. So but the livestock, because they're prey animals, they have pretty heightened senses, and they alert. So your chickens, so we've got chickens and goats, you'll hear them alert if there's a predator, and that alerts my guard dog, and then she's full into action, and she's like, whoa, 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 off I go barking. The other thing that she does is she picks up scents. And so I was having this moment with her, well, a few times where I'll be interacting with her. I've got this on, I've literally, the day that we talked about this, I remember I said I literally just got this on video, because I was videoing, I was playing with her. And then she catches a scent in the air and then she's off. Like she's gone. She's like, that something's. So their job is to pick up on anything that's new or different in the environment, and then they go and investigate it. So she found a turtle not that long ago, and she was losing her mind because she was like, "Who is this guy? Who the hell is this guy?" And I was like, "That is a turtle." And we he was a long way away from the dam, and I had to take him all the way back down to the dam. But yeah, she was like losing her bananas over the fact that there was like this reptile thing here, and what is this? So the turtle was losing its mind as well. It's terrified. Anyway, it fine, swam away. So this is a very, so the livestock guardian dog, their job is to work independently. So this is different to the type of dog, such as a sheepdog, who works under the farmer's instruction. So your sheepdogs don't just get let out in the morning of their kennels and then they're just running around chase sheep all day. That's not how it works. They go out with the farmer and the farmer instructs them on how to work the sheep. If you think about like police and military dogs, their job is not to just walk the streets and see if they can find criminals and then just make decisions about like, this looks like a bad guy, so I'm just going to bite them.
Imagine.
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine?
Maybe they should do that.
Your
So
pocket.
all your Belgian Malinois, all your shepherds, all that, all those really cool dogs, you see that bite work stuff, it's really cool. Police dogs, see all the, your search and rescue dogs. So your
Yeah.
customs dogs, all those scent detection dogs, and your search and rescue dogs that are looking for lost people, cadaver dogs, they don't work independently. They work with their handler on the job, right? A medical alert dog works independently. So there is no human being who says, "Hey, smell for the diabetic light, smell the blood sugar now." There's no one that says that. A seizure alert dog, they are working independently. So there's no one that says, "Hey, just sniff the hormones or whatever it is. Sniff the
Yes.
hormones and see if there's a seizure coming." No, you don't tell them to be on the lookout for it. They are just on the lookout for it. And this is the same as my livestock guardian dog. So she is working without me telling her to work. I don't say, "Hey, go and check on the livestock." She's just always processing her environment. She's listening for her livestock to alert her. She's listening for new and different sounds. She's scenting all the time, which I know because she'll pick up. And one of the differences in my other dogs, like my house dogs, they don't get to just choose to ignore me and walk off and go and do whatever. But a livestock guardian dog, if I can see that she's like picked up a scent or, you know, she just goes running off, I don't stop her because she's doing her job. So
Yes.
I don't know where these predators are because I'm not the dog, I don't have all the senses. So I can't stop her, because that's her decision to make and go and investigate. And I can't, unless I'm, you know, looking at the thing with her. She was talking, did you
Yeah.
see my reel? I was just talking to a kangaroo yesterday. It was hilarious. Out in the
Yeah.
paddock. She's just going, ooh, ooh, ooh. It's just looking at her. It was like, I don't know, 100 meters away or something. It's just standing out looking at her. And she's at the fence going, woo, woo, woo. And then it just hopped off. And she was like, oh.
This thing.
Funny. So her role. So did you know? That's a lot of work for a dog. That's a lot of work, especially a dog that's doing that 24/7. Now, My dog doesn't work typically during the day. She gets put in her pen and then she's dead to the world. She's just asleep all day and she just works at nighttime. I'm starting to extend that as she matures. I'm starting to extend that a little bit. That's very guided by her. She's not wanting to go. She used to just want to go in her pen, like, let me in my pen. Like, every morning she'd be like, yep, sweet. Because I keep all of her special things in there, like all her bones and her favorite toys and stuff are in there. And she's locked out of there at night so she doesn't lose everything all around the property. So in the mornings when I'd go and put her in there, she'd be like, oh, cool, my stuff. Like, oh, check all my stuff out again. Lately, she's been wanting more time out of her pen. So I'm very guided by her. And if I, she still has to be supervised. So she's out at the moment, but I'm home. So I can hear if anything's going down. But when you work livestock guardian dogs, people typically have teams of them. So you don't usually have one. You calculate your, you can calculate your predator load. There's like calculators online that you can use. And basically they figure out how many dogs you need. So what they consider is how much livestock you've got, what size land you've got, and what terrain you have of land. So if it's hilly and wooded, you'd need more dogs. Whereas if it's like open and like you can see everywhere, then you don't need as many dogs. Obviously, a smaller block, you don't need as many dogs. A big block, you're going to need a lot of dogs. A small number of livestock, you don't need many dogs. A big number, you need a lot of dogs. And then you consider also what other management strategies you have in place. So our animals do get locked up at night. So our chickens and goats and stuff, they get locked up securely. And that helps our guide dog do her job. So she still has to patrol at night, but that's it's the her. Livestock aren't just sitting ducks, like, she actually has some help there. So we would need really only one guardian dog. We'll probably get two because that will let them rest and rotate, but also it's really hard to train livestock guardian. It's taking a long time and it's really hard. They want three, they reckon you have to have 3 years age difference between them for them to get along. But we want this guard dog to train the next one, which is what happens if you get it right in the first one. But anyway, the point of all of that is that the workload on the dog is significant and it is considered and it is calculated by people who are farmers who have livestock guardian dogs. They are calculating. And so how many, so you look at sheep dogs, they calculate how many dogs do I need for the amount of work that I've got. Okay. How many people with assistance dogs have two? How many?
And even the language around which we hear a lot, my child has a disability, I got them a dog, it's not an assistance dog, but this is what it helps with, so unofficial. And my other child has a disability and they share the dog, and how that blows up. But where's the consideration for workload and what those dogs need? This comes into too, which is one of the big challenges, is my child has an assistance dog. They need the assistance dog at school, which is a whole nother topic and a whole nother thing. But we really need to think about, well, what are we asking the dog to do in a school environment, which is insanely busy and complex? And I also need that assistance dog to be assisting that child out of school hours. When does the dog get
When do they
rest?
get a rest? When do
How are
any
they?
of these assistance dogs really get a rest, especially the ones that are working? So I had this realization because this is my first livestock guardian dog. I had this realization when I'm watching my dog and I'm like, I'm managing her workload and I'm in all these other dog worlds where workload on the dog is seriously considered. Like, that's seriously considered. And you have more than one dog. If you want a dog to work a lot, you need more than one dog. So
Yes.
it just blows my mind that that hasn't reached the assistance dog world. And I find it quite, I don't want to like throw like a lot of words around, but I find that quite fascinating. But also, like, I can't believe that whole world. Like we're in the therapy dog world. We say to people, you are going to need a team of dogs. You will, if you want to do this full time, you need a team of dogs. You need to rest the dogs. You need to rotate the dogs. You need to this and that. I don't think that's happening in the assistance dog world. I think, like you said as well, even the emotional support animals that are expected to tolerate an entire family of chaos on top of these additional needs that person A, B, and C have as well. But when is the dog rested, and are you rotating them? Are you rotating these? Are you sharing the load? What is the load? What is the workload? Have you calculated the workload that you have? And then have you calculated how many dogs you're going to need? And do you have a concept of how long it takes to train them? Because like I just said, like my guard dog, it's at least 2 years to train them, but 3 years until I can get another one and then she can hopefully train that one. So yeah, I'm just pointing that out in terms of, okay, so let's, if you need your assistance dog, if you're a person who needs your assistance dog, that tells me that your dog is working. So whatever it is that you think that the dog is or is not doing to work for you, to assist you with your disability, whatever that might be, your dog is working. So assistance dog. So if your dog is working, what are the hours that it's doing? How are you managing that? How are you managing workload? Okay, so let's package all that up. Here we go. Think about that. And now you're telling me that you also want this dog to be a therapy dog and it's going to work for other humans as well.
But I don't think that comes from a
What is
place.
happening?
That doesn't come from a place of a nasty place. It really doesn't come from a place of I'm trying to overwork my dog. It comes from a
Of course
place
not.
of I love my dog. I get great benefit and great joy out of my dog. How do I share this dog? And I enjoy the interactions that I have with others that interact with my dog. So it comes from a really kind, considerate place. But it's not a well-considered strategy if we're looking. And I feel like we are often viewed as people don't want to hear this information. They don't welcome this information. We can be seen as the fun police as soon as when we, especially in our course, are talking about the workload of our therapy dogs and what we expect from them. That's a tough information to sell, and that's based on international research, that's based on international guidelines, etc. It's tough information to sell because it's public perception is that all these dogs have amazing capacities to do more than what we're doing as humans or the same, and that's not what the research tells us. Everyone is surprised when we tell them what the true workload is of the capacity of a therapy dog, and we're talking about one working group of dogs. So what about our other dogs that are being expected to work? And if when you said before that if you need that dog and the type of thing that the type of activity that you are doing and that dog is with you, that dog is working, that also is because it's doing something that you're choosing to do. It's working because it's something that you need. You need to go to the grocery store or you need to access. That's not a place your dog's choosing to go. You're not down at the beach, that's where my dog's not working if I'm down at the beach because they're running through the waves and loving life and this is amazing. That's not for me right now. That's for them. So how much of the life balance is for them versus for us? And I think there's a lot of requirement for these dogs to be doing a lot for us, consideration.
Yeah, definitely. I think a rethink around that sort of stuff is going to be really important. I think different types of dog have different workload capacities. I think it's hard to have a blanket rule for all dogs. I think a young, higher drive, working line dog is going to have a way bigger capacity than my nearly 10-year-old border collie that we just talked about, is going to need to retire at some point, probably pretty soon, at least from the clinic, even though he loves it. But we have a flight of stairs that he has to go up and down multiple times a day, and there's things like that that we have to consider. The floor in this room is slippery. I've got a big rug in there that I had put in there when Sonny got older. which is great, but I have to be really careful of the slippery floors and things like that. So if he was working in a different job where there was lots of floor surface changes, or going into a hospital setting or something like that, where there are physical challenges involved as well as the cognitive challenges, the cognitive work, then those are considerations that we have to take on board as well. So it's different. Like there's going to be different considerations for different dogs. I think as a something for us to share into the industry is to just be thinking about this stuff, but knowing how much thought we put into our working therapy dogs and what workload they can manage. I don't know if there would be that many teams that are like underworking their dogs. I don't know if there would be that many teams that are like, oh, well, we won't work you at your capacity. We'll just work you at 50% so that you have 50% more capacity that we can just waste. I don't think that's what's happening. I think that that our teams work their dogs at what they've determined that dog's capacity to be based on their working role, their environment, what's expected of them, etc. But what I don't see is therapy dog teams that have got their dogs working at whatever their capacity they're working them at, who then the dogs have unlimited amount of untapped capacity and potential to provide assistance dog work 24/7 around their therapy dog work. I don't see that anywhere at all. So I think the argument back to this would be, oh, but my assistance dog doesn't have to do much for me. And to you, I will say, then give it away. If you don't need them in that role, retire them from that role and tell them, good job, thank you. Guess what? Now that you're retired as an assistance dog, we're going to do therapy dog work. Because I think the second part of what we need to talk about is the whole time your dog's been an assistance dog, you've been telling them not to pay attention to anyone else around them. So that's why we have rules about not patting service dogs. So everyone knows that. You see an assistance dog out in public, you don't pat the dog. Don't ask to pat the dog. Ignore the dog. Don't talk to the dog. If you guys haven't, I remember being younger and being like, every dog, I was like, hello. And being taught, like, don't even talk to them, please, because they're working and you're distracting them from their work. So you're essentially dealing with a dog that's been told its entire life there is no value in strangers for you. There's no value. And that's exactly how you train that in assistance dogs. You teach them that there's no value in other dogs that you see out and about. There's no value. There's no value in that to you. You'll never get to meet them. You'll never get to play with them. It's not happening. There's no, just ignore, be totally neutral. Just ignore it. Calm, neutral around it. Walk on. And same with other people. Just don't, there's no value in them. There's no reinforcement that can come from that for you. So you've been telling the dog that its entire life so that it can be in a so it can pass a pat test, it can be an assistance dog. And then what you get into your office, so it's an assistance dog, and then you walk into your office and then you're like, and now there's value in all these people that aren't me, and you can split your attention and do whatever. And then now it's our lunch break and I'm gonna take you down to this place where only service dogs are allowed, and now back switch back into there's no value. And anybody else except me, and then switch back into now there's value in. I just think that that is a lot for a dog, and I can't see how that wouldn't leak into each other's roles.
And that's a lot for the dog, but having worked with children, and it's not just children, but what messages are we delivering these children? So you just spoke about how your parents were really clear, you're not interacting with that dog, that's a service dog. We're sending mixed messages to children, but you can pat my assistance dog. Don't pat another assistance dog, but you can pat this one, but this one's here. And because there are handlers of with assistance dogs that are blurring those lines,
I've
so
seen
it makes
them.
it
I've literally
oh.
seen them with my own eyes doing it on the walk around down a Redcliffe.
There's multiple, and the fluidity of the dog's role, they really don't understand. They don't understand the injustice to the dog, but they also don't understand the injustice to the community. We have to be really clear because if you're going to distract another dog that the fluidity isn't available and it's a medical alert dog, and all of a sudden you're distracting this dog, there is massive implications for that. And so our responsibility, especially in a school environment, and this has happened in multiple school environments where we've been talking to them about the language and the appropriate interaction rules. One of them, kids were heckling the dog, meowing at it,
Oh my
throwing stuff
goodness.
at it, because the person had an assistance dog. They would take it into their learning enhancement space or withdrawal space to support kids with learning, and those kids were allowed to interact with the assistance dog. And so there's this disparity around who's allowed and who's not. So then
What?
you've got a whole lot of kids, this assistance dog is walking through the school and they're like, well, we're not allowed to interact with it. So then you get all these behaviors. Yeah, it's not just about you and your dog. There's the dog's experience. There's all the people around them, their experience, and then there's the broader community around you and the mixed messages and experience. It's such a big, complex mess, and we have to get it right. We have to get it right.
Every time I hear stuff like that, I mean, I know I see it all the time, but every time I hear stuff like that, I just think, are these people for real? Like, are these people for real? There's consequences to the things that you do that, like you just so beautifully explained, it's not just about you. This is
It's
why
not.
we tell our therapy dog teams not, we actually tell our therapy dog teams not to wear their coats and bandanas out in public because it confuses people, unless you're literally working with your dog as a therapy dog. But it confuses people if they think, remember we knew that of that person, I won't say actually, because they probably know who they are. We used to see someone fairly regularly, like wearing their stuff out. And I was like, just you don't, and it like some, and we tell people don't use, because I could put my therapy dog coat on any of my dogs and walk into any shop I wanted and not be asked to leave. Like they would just assume that they are assistance dogs. But we don't do that because it's the wrong thing to do by the industry. In fact, most people can buy assistance dog stuff and walk into most places, and most places won't say anything because they're scared of getting sued for discriminating against somebody's service dog. So, but it's the wrong thing to do. It is the wrong thing to do to have these dogs that aren't assistance dogs out in these spaces, because listen to what we're saying about assistance dogs. Like, I just think they're a joke. Like, the dogs, but that's because the dogs that I see that are wearing assistance dog stuff, like 9 out of 10 of them, they're just idiots. They're like literally barking at us.
So my local Kmart, I'm not naming this, well, naming the store is not a problem because the store did nothing wrong, but two little fox terriers with little service dog jackets barking the Kmart down. I could hear them across departments. So I was like, what the hell's going on? Where is this barking coming from? And then lady couldn't stop her dog from barking, so she picked it up, and so she's carrying this
Right.
service dog. So you're like, that is not like, what is going on? But that is not, who are the people around you? You could have someone that's terrified of dogs, you could have someone that has an allergy to dogs. You've just exposed people to these dogs for no, and
No
we're in an
reason.
environment they thought was safe for them to come without a dog present or without a dog that was well trained present. And you've just, it had impacts for other people. So we need to stop just thinking about ourselves and thinking, oh, well, I love my dog and I just want to take them everywhere. And I love the interactions I have, and actually think about the bigger implications, because it's not good. It's not good for our community.
It's really sad that it's sad that I think that assistance dogs are such a joke at the moment, because the ones that I see really doing their jobs, I'm just so in awe of them. Like, I just think, wow, like, wow, look at, we're so lucky to have dogs, like, far out, wow. But then I come back to like reality, my reality of my local area, and I'm like, these dogs are just a huge joke. Like, I cannot tell you the number of times, because I do our therapy dog assessments down on the Redcliffe foreshore. So I'm down there with other people's dogs walking up and down there all the time. I cannot tell you the number of times that we've had dogs wearing assistance dog jackets, and some of them are branded. So some of the worst incidents we've had have been dogs wearing jackets branded by apparently respectable companies. And the dogs have been, barking and lunging at us. And I just think, what is this coming? Like, we had one that was literally a vision dog, and it dragged a cafe table because it was looped around the cafe. And it, like, we walked past this little schnauzer, and it like dragged the cafe table over towards us. And I was like,
Was it a vision dog
so
that was a schnauzer?
no, I was with someone that had a schnauzer.
It's like I haven't heard of that.
Yeah,
I had
and
a
it
dog
was a
steal
big
a
dog.
cupcake off a table.
Classic. I've had mine dogs bark at me without a dog, walking past someone, and they just start barking and lunging at you. You know what I should do? I should just, when that happens, I should just walk up to them and just take their coat off them and just be like, you'll get this back when you can. What do you think would
Maybe
happen? Do you
film
think
it.
I'd get bitten
Maybe
by the
by the handler. Maybe film it and then share that
Do you remember that
because
time I called Smart Pups about that lady that I saw at the shopping center? Do you remember the time I did that? She was a puppy raiser and the dog was wearing all its branded stuff. And I, no joke, I was in a cafe waiting for my car to get serviced by myself, like a loser. And
without a dog.
had my laptop out, so at least I look like I was there for a reason. And no joke, this dog, puppy dog, she was a service dog raiser, puppy raiser. And just absolutely everyone was allowed to pat the dog. It was wearing its jacket with its little ID. Everyone was allowed to pat it. She let it drop the lead and let it run over to the cafe guy, the manager guy, who was like talking to the. I'm like, does he know this dog? Are they related? Is it his dog? The way that he was like, yeah. And it like ran over through the cafe, ran with no. She dropped the
Yeah.
lead. Doing and it
But
was
that.
doing tricks for little kids. Like, and I rang Smart Pups and I was like, hey, I don't know how you guys are supposed to raise assistance dogs because I don't do it. But I saw this at the shops today. Is that what you were hoping for? And the lady on the phone was pissed off about the situation. She was like, absolutely not. So I know that they're supposed to be socialized really well and they can, be. Yeah, socialized, but she told me, she was like, no. And she was like, I bet I know who that was. And I told her the dog was wearing its ID. And she was like, yeah, we've had issues, this
Well, you
person.
couldn't have called if they didn't. And that's the feedback needs to go back to
Yeah. She
support.
probably wrecked that dog. It's like how many of the tens of thousands of dollars? That's probably wreck.
Huge money.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? Anyway, but what were we saying? So the point is, you're gonna ruin the industry, so don't do it. So, well, that's what we think. That's what I think, and this is the reason that we think these things. It is very hard to train a dog to be assistance dog standard. I always say, like, my dogs would pass a pat test, and they would, not Penny, but they would. But I'd need to spend some time on it for sure. To train a dog to be an assistance dog standard, it's pretty high. But also they have to have the stable temperament as well. They have to have the right temperament. And they have to have enough drive to want to go places and do things with you that you're doing during the day. So it is very challenging for a dog to be an assistance dog. It's quite hard for them to do, especially in medical alert dogs. That takes a lot. So I just want people to have a think about whether or not you need that versus would you like to work with your dog in a therapy dog setting? Because I do think that you need to make the choice one way or
Yeah.
the other. That's what we expect. We don't allow our dogs to work both roles.
For the best interest of the dog and for it to be sustainable and yeah, such a complex space. I hope people reach out and share their thoughts based on this conversation because we're open to it, but gosh, you probably don't have your own stories to tell to add to our many stories.
Every time I talk about this sort of stuff, people always tell me about, yeah, wild stories. Remember that time that I met that lady and I can't, like, it's really hard for us to tell stories on the podcast without people figuring out who we're talking about. Yeah. I was at a place and there was this lady there and her son had an assistance dog, but he was at school. So he was under 18. So he didn't handle the dog at school. And so she just took the dog to work with her every day, working in our
Yeah.
field. Took the dog to work with her every day. And then, like, she would get home and her son would be home from school. And then the dog would go back to being his assistance dog after she had it being an assistance dog. And I was like, but can you have that dog in the public? And she's like, yeah, I'm the dog's handler, so I can have the dog in public access. And I was like, but you don't have a disability. So
What's the point of
what's the
having this?
point? But it was in our industry. So it was being exposed, which, whatever, like, okay, You can have an assistance dog and be in our industry. That's fine. But
Yeah.
then it was going home and working. So like,
Yeah.
when does the dog rest? Why are you working this dog all day and all night? Like, why though? I don't get it. Anyway, people have to choose their own adventure for so many things in life, and we can't tell everybody what to do. But those are just some of the things that I want people to consider and have a think about. And again, just really driving home that point that I always thought this, like we've talked about this before, I've always thought this, but I feel like I really understand it on a different level now that I'm working with a dog who has to work independently of me telling her to work. So she's working all the time, unless I put her in her pen. She's working all the time. So it doesn't matter, like my house dogs, like my therapy dogs, like they're not working all the time. They're not working ever, except for when they're in a session with people. So they're not, like they're not doing it. But my guardian dog, she's working all the time when she's not in her pen. So she's like, she was out all night and then she's out today. So she's working all that time. She's paying attention. If you watch her, like I will check in on her, I'll check in on the cameras or something like that. And you watch her and she just sits and watches. She just sits or she lays down and watches. Or even if she falls asleep, you see her pop her head up and she'll sniff at the air. Or I've got all these videos of like I'm playing with her and then you see her demeanor totally change and she goes into like whoop, alert mode and she's listening. I can see she's listening to something and I shut up. Yeah, like I shut up and stop distracting her because I'm like, oh, she's working. Don't distract the working dog. And I think I was at boot camp, Pat's boot camp, and she had grown. It was on the last day, I think it was. Yeah, the last morning. So we'd been there for 5 days or 4 nights or whatever. And so she'd grown really accustomed to it's this big property. She'd grown really accustomed to the house yard. So I've walked her around it 10 million times because I had to facilitate her working drive, while we were camping there. So she got used to it, right? So there's 10 other dog and handler teams plus staff at this facility. So she's all week, she's been smelling them and their dogs. She's took her a couple of days to settle in, but she's been smelling them and she's like, yep, yeah, okay. I didn't realize this, right? So I'm like, I know she's smelling stuff, but she's cruising around. Then on the last day, I saw the owner, it's an Airbnb, I saw the owner drive in to this work shed that's next door. And I saw him go into the chicken coop, which is in the house yard. He threw scraps in there and he went back out through this like side gate thing, right? I saw him. I was like, oh, he's feeding the chickens. She didn't see him. We were ages away, right? As we walk down and do that lap of the house yard where I'm walking her, she goes into full work mode. Like she just goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on. And she scents and she follows this guy, like tracks exactly where he walked.
No.
Exactly where I saw him. Exactly where he walked, nose on the ground. And she's doing this like really nose fully in the dirt, but really breathing in this scent because it was something new and different in
Yeah.
the environment that she's been living in for 5 days. And I told Pat, and he was like, can you imagine? I was like, I can't believe you know that dogs do this stuff, but then you see them do it, and you're like, far out, that's amazing. And Pat was saying, could you imagine just interpreting the whole world by odor? Like, they are doing that all the time, right? That doesn't turn off. You can't turn off odor.
No.
You can reduce stimuli, but you can't turn that off. Your assistance dogs are working off of odor. All of them are going to be working off of odor. All of your psychosocial support dogs are working off of your odor. All of your medical alert dogs, your diabetic dogs, they're all working off of odor. So just remember that they are working all, even if it looks like they're not. Like I'd walked Kiki through that yard 1,000 laps of that yard. I swear to God, it was hours every morning and every afternoon because I was camping in the van with her. So I was having to do all of her exercise. Laps and laps and laps. I have never seen such, like she follows my scent around. Unbelievable. So it was just a real reminder, like she's processing. She didn't just like oh, I wonder if she didn't see the guy. Do you know what I mean? She's processing odors. Every lap that we did, she was processing that odor. Every lap. But you don't realize just how hard the dogs are working.
And this is the comment I make about dogs in schools because of the number of interactions they have and the number of people that are coming through that environment. It is way more exhausting than a private practice or a home clinic. Massive difference. Wilbur is cat obsessed, and he will tell me in his behavior who owns cats. Like, he'll have a string of people because he loves, he's like, you're my gateway to meeting a cat because
Oh
you've
my
got one.
God.
He just loves cats, and he gets really happy when there's a cat person.
It's
It's
hilarious.
hilarious. And so I always, it's a great way to build connection because I'm like, do you own a cat? And they're like, no. Like, because my dog's very happy to meet you right now. More so than others. But I just know how important that's his one. Like, Lucy couldn't care less. But Wilbur, he's like, who are my cat people? I want to snuggle. I'm going to come up and really snuggle up next to you. It's weird as. But it shows me how much he's using his nose in the interactions. It's not, hi, how are you? I'll meet you. I'll meet you. He's looking for different things. And he's a dog. He hasn't even been taught that. He just knows what he likes and he doesn't. So I know 100% what you're talking about. And my dog doesn't have the same superpowers. He just needs to be friendly and enjoy people. He doesn't need to tell me, report back about their cat status. That's not a disability. That is not
Does
a
he
disability.
know that?
I think it's just his passion. We all have passions in life, and cats are his thing.
Maybe he saw you liking a cat and then he's like, my mum loves cats, so I've got to get her a cat.
We used to have a cat called Max, and he would pin Max down and lick him,
Oh
and
my
they both
God.
would love it, like it was
That's
his new
hilarious.
love. And I think he's always just grieved the loss of Max. And then when
Bless.
Max, do you know Max? You have a cat. Like, do you know Max?
Do you know where Max is? Looking for him for
Never met
years.
him. But yeah, he's just, but it, like, when you're really talking about that scent experience, I know his interactions are way more than what we just see. I know the layers. Well, like, I probably can't even blow my mind the layers, but it wouldn't surprise me. He knows what lunch is in their bags. He'd know, oh, he's a banana obsessed. He knows he has bananas packed in their bags. And it's just because my dog has these extreme interests. It feeds into how much is going on for him. So a day at school isn't, oh, I get to say hi to people. It's the banana status and cat status of everyone, and then all the other things that I don't even know that he's looking for.
But it's like, is he scanning every person though and
Yeah.
processing all the odor to go, no cat, no banana? Because that's so much work. Do you know what I mean? That's probably what they're doing. I don't know.
And when you
We
think,
actually have sent people coming on the podcast soon, guys.
oh,
So they'll probably maybe listen to that one straight after if you're going back through the catalog because we might be talking shit. But our observations are the dogs, but I know. So odor is like massive for dogs, and that's how they process the world. So
yes.
we know that because that's how diabetic alert dogs and seizure dogs, that's how they work. It's off odor.
Yeah.
So just be aware of what workload, how does your dog actually do its job? What
Yeah.
is the workload that's on the dog? And I'm talking to you, therapy dog teams, as well. Be aware of what workload you're putting on your dog, because if you're considering then going, oh, I'm going to also make my dog an assistance dog, why? Anyone who doesn't have an assistance dog and is thinking about putting a dog into that role, why?
Yeah.
Why do you, and what is the working role and blah, blah, blah? What's the workload? Anyone who doesn't have a therapy dog or even if you've already got your therapy dog, I should have said, even if you've got an assistance dog already, just be thinking about your why. And really look at this from like a more sort of systematic point of view of like, okay, so or logistically, what workload is on the dog? What am I expecting of this dog? And if I want the dog to do a good job, I would say give it one job.
Yeah.
I would say that's what I think. I think that's
Yeah.
what's fair on the, especially these roles are competing roles. So your assistance dog is doing the opposite job to the therapy dog. The assistance dog is there just for you. You only. The therapy dog is for everyone else in the room.
The last comment I want to make on that is, how do you switch off your needs to then share your dog with others too? Because if you're offering it as a therapy dog, if you're saying you can interact with this dog, what stage are you saying, actually, my need, you can't interact right now because I need the dog? That's
Yeah, how do you do that?
a really difficult position and a very confusing position for the dog, but a very difficult position ethically, very difficult position for you to be like, the dog's here for you, the dog's here for the benefit, especially if you're a clinician. And then you're like, no, it's not. I need the dog, but I'm not going to tell you that I have a need right now. Because
Raise a really good point because I just
how?
realized that people who haven't done our course would not know what we mean by this. When you're working with your dog in a therapy setting, you are largely ignoring your dog. You're not your dog's primary reinforcer. We largely don't reinforce our own dogs with pats and praise and all that sort of stuff because we want to become less valuable to the dog in that setting. We want the new person to become their primary reinforcer. So if I keep, of course, I'm my dog's favorite person. If I keep patting my dog and giving them, meeting all their needs, their attention needs, their play needs, they're not going to look to anyone else in the space to get those needs met. So we purposely don't give them that. We direct the other person, them to the other person in the room. We, facilitate that engagement with the other person through whatever way is the most natural way possible for us to do that. Now, before you freak out, that doesn't mean that we don't check in with our dogs. So if my dogs come to me for a check-in, absolutely. They get eye contact, I speak to them, I pat them, whatever it is, and then I say something that transitions them from me to someone else. So, and I'll facilitate that transition. I don't keep the dog with me because what happens, and I can tell you, I've been doing this for a very long time. What happens if the dog is not showing the client the amount of attention that the client needs? The client will say, "You just have the dog here for you, don't you? You just have that dog here because you want to bring your dog to work. The dog doesn't like me." XYZ insert saying here. Now, in my role as a psychologist, I am now in a position where bringing my dog to this therapy space has now made this space more unsafe for my client, which is the exact opposite of what I'm supposed to be doing. That's the exact opposite of the reason that I've got all this goddamn natural lighting, pot plants, nice artwork, fish tank, therapy dog, all this shit is in here. To create a safe space, a nice safe space where people feel comfortable. And by having the dog here, if that's what's the client's experience of having the dog is, then having the dog there means that I have now just made this space not safe for them. So, and that is the case if the dog is rejecting them because it's favoring you. If the dog is not rejecting them, it's not favoring me. It's just an interaction that has taken place and the person has perceived it that way. Now, that's therapeutically beneficial for me. And I can use that and we can work through it. And it's probably useful that that has happened and that I've observed that. But if the dog is actually rejecting them and favoring me, then they aren't wrong, are they? So the person, the client. So anyway, I just realized that that is something that we talk about quite extensively in our courses, but the people listening to the podcast won't know that yet. So that's why Amy's saying what she's saying about when do you, so how do you tell your dog? Because your dog's picking up on your odor all the time. So if you're trying to do your job in whatever capacity that you have your therapy dog there, how is the dog supposed to know that now's the time to ignore whatever's going on for you?
And if you don't know why your dog is in your session and how you're incorporating it, you're missing a big piece of the puzzle. So come and do a course. We like to
Great
inspire
point.
people to, it's
Excellent point. Those are our parting
lovely.
words. Okay, guys, thanks for listening to us have a chat about this. This is what we think. This is why we think what we think. But yeah. feel free to share your thoughts on the topic as well. And thank you, lovely Amy, for being with us. And we're going to have Amy back a couple of times over the next little while to share her insights with us. So we'll be hearing more from Amy. If you've got any ideas or questions you'd like to ask, flick them through. All
Please
right.
do.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.